another interview. This time it's from Eddie de Santiago with the folks over at Hexworks, making Lords of the Fallen. The creative director, Cesar Virtuoso, and Sal Gascon, head of studio and executive producer on Lords of the Fallen. Let's take a look as they talk about the beautiful new environments, the pairing, and the wide world that they've created.
All right. So, Caesar, Cesar, it's pronounced in Romanian, Virtuoso, which is V-I-R-T-O-S-U. And the creative director, but I'm not, unfortunately.
So my name is Saul Gascon, G-A-S-C-O-N, and Saul, I better call Saul. I'm the head of studio and executive producer for the game.
So my first question is, what is it about the original Lords of the Fallen that you felt made it worth revisiting?
So the basically the Lords 1, or the original one, left a set of solid foundations, right? In the, you know, the universe, some of the NPCs, right? So, but it also had its issues, right? In terms of the combat pacing. So basically what we did when we took when we thought of, okay, how we can do a sequel or a reboot to this, right? We started as a sequel, to be very honest with you. And then we said, okay, how can we do a sequel? What do we need to improve, right? So we jumped down into all the feedback from press, players, on Steam community, Reddit, everywhere, right? Like we read all the reviews with everything. And then we kind of came with a kill list. We were like, okay, faster combat was one of them, right? And a possibility to create different characters, right? Not just playing with one set character. So we took all of those and then we said, okay, how can we build like from the foundations on the first, right? To fix all these, let's say, improvements that people was asking for, right? So at the end, we ended up changing so many things in the core. That's why we call it a reboot. Right, because we change the graphics, we change the combat pacing. So now you can be a slow fuck as well, right? You know, you can go with a big armors, like a huge weapon, like this. But it's your choice now, right? So you can choose either be like very fast, very quick, two knives, or like super slow, the big hammer, or whatever you want, right?
All right. Well, were there any aspects about the original game that you wanted to include or that you felt you needed to avoid?
Yeah, well, everything. We took the first game in its entirety, including certain armors, beliefs, things that they mention on paper, the lands of Ebb. We made them real. They mentioned the heroes of yore, the judges who smote a deer. Boom, we make them real. We took everything, but expanded tenfold. Because once we made their mythos playable and real, we just opened the because we wanted to create the worlds of the fallen, we wanted to tell stories, small stories, big stories, epic journeys, lands of misery, hope, permeated by religion, belief in this ominous resurrection of God and how it affects people and how madness reaches you if when you're influenced by gods, because gods are massively important to our lore. So we were incredibly faithful. And people who play the first game and enjoyed the stories and the characters will eat well in Lords of the Fallen. It's not an entirely different game.
And there is a couple of surprises that we're not going to spoil, but there is some NPCs that are actually related very closely to the first game.
Armor, weapons. Factions.
Yeah, and in terms of factions, indeed, in this one, you have, three main factions, right? The Radiants, or Radiant faction, followers of Orius, which is mentioned in some lore, pieces of the first game, right? So we took that and, as Cesar said, made it real, expanded, show it to you, hey, these are the Radiant people, right? These are the Adir followers, the demons, let's say. And we added a third faction, Umbra, which is, they have their own god as well, more like Cthulhu,
that's
crazy.
That's a dark secret that people, if they dig deep enough in the game, they will discover. What is the nature of Umbro? Surely it can't be just a spooky place. Must be something.
But we have cameos from the first game as well.
For sure.
Some are like the same characters, right? That just appear again. How they can survive 1,000 years? Well, you you will see it when you play. And then as well, like as we say, like the clerics, for instance, the three judges that defeated Adar in the first place.
On an armor in the first game, it was said that the sons of Medusa, they turned to stone, blah, blah, blah. So now we have a character from those lands. She has a name. You find her petrified. And she's explained to you what's got. So that's how we took the lore and okay, let's play this. Let's stop talking about it. Let's play it. Let's see how it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at the end, we have a very good foundation. We took it, respected it, and expanded it. Right?
Okay, my next question is, Souls-like are a genre that many players gravitate towards because the key part of these games is growing stronger and taking down enemies and bosses that initially seemed impossible. As players grow stronger in their single-player journey, how do you balance that growth when they jump into multiplayer, both cooperative and PvP? Like, how do you go from being an unstoppable god killer to someone who dies because they got parried a few times in a row?
Well, actually, for that, we've developed several systems, right? So when you play in co-op, we always leverage the levels of players. So for instance, if I would join in you and I'm like end game, like at level 90, and you're like level, I don't know, 20, my character is going to set at level 20 in terms of damage output, and etc. So then this way I don't ruin your game. You know, I don't come in and just one hit. Like, hey, look how fun it is. Yeah, right? So that's one thing. And then for PvP, we do the same. We also leverage the two players, right? Usually it's the invader that gets, usually invaders, they always find the ways to fuck around with people, right? So then we have that system in which basically when they come in, we check their damage output, and then we leverage it to yours, right? So then even if they try to find exploit, we kind of leverage it down. So it's always a fair fight, and it's just about skill, basically.
For the bosses themselves, they're 100% skill soft gates, but they're all, we left weaknesses that you can spot with the lamp, the reddish areas where they take a lot of damage, and some of them have unique mechanics. A lot of them are very weak to parry. Some of them are deplete the posture of a limb that opens them up for a critical hit that is devastating. So if you can brute force them, but if you're struggling with the boss, it's worth looking in Umbral. Is there a parasite that gives this boss a poison attacks? Yes. Luigi mentioned, you suck the parasite out, no more poison attacks. Oh. So we give the players tools to mitigate danger, but this plays into our desired gameplay paradigm that we have this detective work. You've seen it, you know, you kind of have a look around. Maybe this is so you can brute force it, but if you look around, you will find ways to mitigate danger.
And of course, you always have the let's say the resort of, you know, going back to previous areas, grind your level up, right? Collect some bigger level up, and then
get teaser. Yeah. Get a friend, rando.
And the RPG mechanics are very important to us. So actually, every boss has weaknesses to specific, let's say, poison or radiant magic. So even if you're not a magic user or a poison user, right, you can always find or buy from vendors like something that boosts your weapon with radiant damage, right? So you find an enemy, he's weak to radiance, but I'm not a magician. I still can go put some radiant oil on my sword, right? And now I'll see the health, you know, going down faster, right?
But so, they're tough.
They're tough. They're always tough.
They're not pushovers, or at least we hope they're not.
But we give you a lot of, basically, our goal was to give people a lot of tools or ways to approach the challenges we put on, right? There's always going to be an optimal one, right? That's what you want to find in wikis, right? Like a wiki, like, to beat this boss, use this oil and call this helper and do this and that.
Use range attacks. It's a free win.
Or yes. Range attacks.
That's true. That's true.
So going off of that, another trademark of the genre is a parry system. And I like how you implemented yours, especially how you can parry, like, even with a spear. How did you build that system up? And how, even after you wear down their posture, you still have to break it with, like, a special attack. How did you come up with that?
Well, we're all players, yeah? We saw that the first games, the parry system was not overly used. People didn't get engaged with. And very early on, for the onset, we said, okay, how we can make this more fluid, more in the ebb and flow, not press a button and high win, high reward, because we need. So we came up with this setup where you last moment block. So even if you fail the timing, there's a chance that you can still block.
Mm.
And this led to the whole, like you said, the posture system. Yeah. And kind of, we like this. Wow, this feels so good. And it allows you to get these near miss and near parries. And you feel like a god of the sword.
Mm. Yeah. But also that's why we added also the withering on your health.
Yes.
When you only block, right? So if you miss, you still get a bit penalized. Like, bad boy, you should parry better, right? Yeah. But we don't just do, as he said, like a black or white parry or death. Right?
You can get your HP back. Exactly. So you can fire. Okay, half my HP is withered, but I can get it back.
The cool thing is with this system that Cesare is explaining, right, is that like if you are a parry type of player, right, more like games, more fast games like Bloodborne or other things like this, right, you just use two swords or whatever weapon is your poison, right, and just parry, bam, bam, bam. So very fast, very quick. But if you are like more of a tank player, like big armor, big shield, huge hammer, you can still do it, right? Like you just, you know, turtle yourself, you get hit, you get your health like withered, but then you deliver one massive blow to recover it all at once, right? So this was probably one of the things that we, from the beginning, we knew what we wanted, as Cesar said, but we iterated a lot to, you know, like tweak it so it supports all playstyles, basically. But so you can play the game full parrying, or you can play the game full turtling, and we support both.
It's worth mentioning that in our game, because of the wizard mechanic and how easy it is, we're not the 100% protection shield are not predominant like in other games, like in, you know, your Dark Souls and your other games. So because we want to engage you with the I'm blocking, I'm getting my stuff back, but we do have 100% protection shields.
Okay, that actually brings me to my next question. So there are 9 classes to pick from in the game, and how do you keep them all fun and viable?
You want to take some?
Yeah, I think that it's how you build all the RPG systems and mechanics and the combat mechanics, right? So basically, whenever we add a new feature, right, whether is it a ranged mechanic, like how you integrate it in combat, or is like the parrying or the blocking, it's always keeping into mind like the different different playstyles that we want to support, right? So those 9 classes are a rough representation of the different playstyles you can have in the game, right? Then after that, you can unlock new classes depending on the ending that you do. But those are more like deep into one playstyle. Like one is for instance, like full in Rogar Warlord, right? So it's like big mace and a lot of fire everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Another one is a Radiant one, so protection, range, combat. Another one is an umbral assassin, let's say, right? So it's not easy, but it's like every time you do a class, you need to have all the systems supporting that class, right?
So, and behind this is the thematics and the fantasies, the tropes. Mm. Like you're the knight, I'm the assassin, I'm the killer, I'm the hunter. So we have to cater to these fantasies as well. And basically the loadout writes itself.
How do you balance the gameplay for newcomers to the genre without losing the difficulty that veterans are looking for?
Well, this is the big question, right? You have an incredibly challenging game. When we started nearly four years ago, 3 years and a half, the market was not as broad, so we were still making a niche game, and we wanted to over-deliver for the niche audience. We didn't want to... We learned the sins of the past. We need... But then again, Elden Ring came in and opened the audience. So now the questions are, how do we bring these people in? So, several ways. Another group of all of them. Saul can pick up one. But one of the biggest for us was onboarding. As in, make a lengthy tutorial. You saw all the village, everything. Make a lengthy tutorial. Have a playground to play. Explain the mechanics relentlessly. Have players express them. And then let them out into the world. Because the moment the players step outside the hub, the real game begins.
Yeah, so in that regard, it's never easy, right? So what we've got is a lot of playtests. So that's something that is very important for us, the way that we work. is that internally we have the group of directors, right? With Cesar as creative, but we also have another director, animation director, a lighting director. And what we do is that internally we work what we call in strike teams. So then you have a team for player combat, another one for AI, another one for bosses, right? Why I'm explaining you this, you will see. So then the thing is that they work in sprints, like in 2 weeks, right? And they deliver prototypes slash more polished things, right? It depends on the stage. And then we check with the directors, like, okay, this is a good direction, not, it should be changed, etc. But also, this is like who watches the watchers, like in Watchmen, you know? So who watches the directors? So it's players, right? So what we do is that on every month, we're still doing, play tests with players or with mock reviewers, etc. So external people that has no attachment to us, like they don't care about us, you know what I mean? They are not polluted by our day-to-day. Biased. Exactly, they're not biased. And that helps us a lot, right? Because we saw a lot of things like, oh shit, we thought this was easy, but you know, new players to the genre, they don't understand. Okay, let's explain it. Is it enough in the tutorial? Yes. No. Okay, if it's not, what do we do? So then We've worked a lot on those, basically on some of the features we've modified just to be able to, for people to understand, right? One, like, gonna give you one key example is in Lords of the Fallen, you can create your own bonfires, right? The vestiges. So you raise those vestige seedlings to create your thing. So our original intent was to only have one old or ancient vestige in the whole game, right? In the hub. That's it.
One for free.
One. And then that's the one for free. Exactly. And then everything else you had to build up. For us, it was like, oh, this is amazing, you know?
With rare resources. Yeah. You don't make a seedling, whatever. No.
Yeah.
Talk with, a guy knows a guy. He's going to give you a little seedling. You need four.
Yeah. So we did that. And then we saw veteran players were like, oh, yes, you know, nipple twisting. Yeah, you know, like super happy. But then when we saw the more newbies to the genre, or players just played Elden Ring, not any previous Souls-like. They were like, what the fuck is this? And we were like, oh shit, we went too far. So what did we do?
We went too far.
We went too far, yeah. So now in the new game, you have a lot of vestiges, right? Still, it's good. It's better if you use the vestige seedlings because you can put it in front of a boss room. You can put it in key locations, right? So your first playthrough is more catered for new players. But on NG+, when you go to NG+, this is where the real Lords of the Fallen start.
The unfettered. And there is
only one vestige.
You know, so we're back at the initial plan. The new game plus, it's going to be biblical.
Yeah. So then if you already know the levels, right? If you're in NG+, so you'll have a better time to know where to place the vestige. But every old or ancient vestige is gone. So it's only one in the hub. So that's kind of our original vision, right? But through playtesting, to your question, right, it was too much. So it's like, okay, let's give it to veterans of our game in NG+, right?
So we made concessions. We made concessions because we are hardcore like that.
Souls-likes are known for their gorgeous visuals, whether it's environments, like bosses or enemies, even the weapons and like armor and magic that players can use. How do you tie that to gameplay design? And what comes first, the concept art or the gameplay?
We
super intertwined, right?
Yeah, we are big fans of immersion and narrative. For us, everything needs to make sense. So once you have all these concepts in carbonite, like this faction has these visual languages, we call them, that infects animations and everything, the designs write themselves. So when the art director comes in, he knows the nature of the Umbro. Exactly what's up.
Mm.
Everything. So, yeah, same with the factions, with the Roga. We knew them as beasts, you know, the tackling, the struggles. So obviously, the everything writes themselves. So, we're in a very privileged position in Saul. We just look at tremendous art. And for us, it's very easy to say, this is the actual good design, and this is just variations. No, this is
what... The advantage of the... We have a very... cohesive director team, right? So like everything kind of makes sense together, right? So we didn't start from one place or another, right? We started everything at the same time, from gameplay to visuals, and we worked them in parallel tracks, let's say, but they always were intertwined, right? So like whenever, like for instance, a designer would come with an enemy design, right? The art director could go like, oh, wait a second, this is a type of attack is more for this faction. So there is, it is very important for us. Immersion is kind of the most important thing for us. That's why, for instance, in this world, nobody cares about you. And this is a way to give you immersion, right? Nobody comes, hey, sit here. You're the hero. We all love you. That you don't have that here, right? It's like, nobody cares about you. You are there. You can save the world or doom it. Up to you. You choose basically, you can choose any of the endings that you want to achieve. And it will depend on with whom of those NPCs you align with, right? So if you align with somebody Rogar, you're going to get towards the Rogar ending, right? If you align with the Umbral guys, you're going to get to the Umbral ending. Or if you follow the canon ending, right? Which is following what Dan Meyer, the guy in the intro, right, with the big hat and the big stick. So you will find then you will then do the radiant ending, the canon one.
One big advantage of having all this lore and all these stories of these characters written or otherwise present before any visuals come in, is that we can incorporate in the visuals very background information. Yeah. One random example, we have a car or a grave digger, and has pockmarks on his face. That is because he used to be an Iron Maiden, because he used to be a knight in the order, and he was tortured savagely. He lost his mind, and now he tends to the tombs, to other knights. He will never say that I used to be this guy. So, but it's in his body posture. And a lot of the NPCs, the visual language and the close designs will tell you secrets that they themselves won't admit. And suddenly when you hear the dialogue, the bitterness, everything clicks into place. So doing our work early on, agreeing, shaking hands, this is what we want. This character is this archetype and this, and then art comes in and they have so many tools that they can render. They have so many things to work with. How is he? Was he stripped? The skin flare? What? How can I do? Because the story makes the character, not the other way.